So, James, when you are walking through the field at this time of year, so it's late June, and, you know, everything's going smoothly. You're walking around. You're looking at your beautiful hops.
First off, there's your first mistake. Not that hops aren't beautiful, but everything's going smoothly in late June. That's just not going to happen. But anyway,
I was
continue.
Thinking about the fact that we see, you know, folks asking us questions. We see all the forums on Facebook and people posting pictures of a leaf or a hop cone and saying, what is this? What's going on? And you get 1,000 people giving them answers and then fighting over those answers. And, well, it's this or it could be this or just, you know, just sprinkle a little, you know, rub some butter on it and it'll be fine. You know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So I thought it might be great to develop a series of flashcards where I could surprise you with, hey, what is this? And you could tell everyone what they're seeing and how to fix it. So what I'd like you to do, and listeners, follow along as well, I want you to close your eyes and picture you're walking in between a few of your rows.
Unless they're driving. We don't want them doing that.
Good
or they're in a
good
tractor.
Point. Heavy machinery. Open your eyes, please. Please.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Or if they're at dinner with their spouse, don't.
Who's listening to us while they're at dinner with their spouse?
Really?
I mean, my
really
spouse
cool
doesn't
people.
Listen to me at dinner with me. I mean, what? No.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
That's very true. Okay, anyway.
All right.
Diddle-doo. Okay, we're thinking about.
Looking
at the hop yard.
So you look to your to your left, and you see just a single vine that looks wilted, and it's surrounded by three other healthy ones. So what could be going on with that one vine?
So I am assuming all the other plants around it are probably fine. So if it's just that one vine, I would say, well, first off, before I really got too deep into it, how many plants do I have? Because if it's 10 plants, then yeah, you're freaked out. If you've got 10,000 plants, move on. But in this scenario, what I would say is, first thing I would immediately do is go to the bottom of the vine. So follow that wilted vine. It's probably wound up, you know, wrapped around with all these other vines on the string. Find it, trace it all the way back to the ground. And I bet you dollars to donuts that one of two things has happened. There's an infection in the vine at the base, or there's a mechanical damage to that vine somewhere near the base that caused the rest of the plant to wilt. So those are the causal factors, but what caused it is a different story, right? So immediately, if you've only got one vine out of five or six or whatever's coming out of that crown and only one of them's like completely wilted, that's not a disease symptom. There's something structural has happened. Even before I bent down there and looked at the vine to see if it was even still attached to the crown, first thing I would do is say, look around me and how much, if it's like a lot of grass around or a lot of heavy weeds, the first likely candidate would be something, a larval insect called a vine borer. Sometimes people call them corn borers too, not the same thing, but similar principle, where you get this little larva that burrows its way into the woody vine and basically, well, cuts off all of the nutrient flow to the plant and it wilts. And that's usually vine borers, usually are associated with heavy weeds.
So
and
if
tall
it's
grass.
A vine borer, we're seeing just one bad vine in a group of healthy ones. But are you then going to see that repeated pattern around? Is that a...
Quite possibly. If you have heavy weed infestation in your hop yard and you see this occurrence, this single wilted vine happening more than one location, my guess is that you probably have a borer. And you'll oftentimes find a hole that's, you know, bored, reddened through the bottom of the side of the vine. near the soil surface, and if you break that open or cut it open, you'll see, sometimes you'll find the larva, the worm still in there, but other times you'll find it's been channeled out. And that's completely preventable just by keeping your weeds and grass out of your hop yard. The other options, I would follow that bind down to the base and give it a slight gentle tug, and it's likely going to pop out of the ground or break off of the crown. That could have been from the bind borer, but it can also happen. I think we talked earlier, one of our other episodes, weather whacking, about if your binds bounce around a lot, they can get stress cracks on them, and then fusarium bacteria can get in, and that will eventually clog up all of the pipes, the little straws inside of the bind that carry the liquid, and basically strangle it slowly to the point where it just pinches off. And so then you've got wilt, we call it.
And this is interesting wilt, because we have one symptom that we're seeing, and you've got three very different possibilities here that we're talking about.
Yep, totally. It's not just one thing. You don't go out and look at your hop yard and say, oh, I've got yellow leaves, so it must be a nutrient deficiency. No, that is a symptom of a multitude of things, and we got to keep asking questions to get to the bottom of it. That's why people posting pictures on Facebook and asking, hey, other, you know, pro small-scale hop growers, what's wrong with my plant?
You'll get lots of opinions on that.
Oh, you will, and everybody thinks that they're right, but nobody asks more questions, which is ultimately what it takes. There's very few things in the hop yard from a diagnosis standpoint that can be answered with a single observation.
It's your most infuriating phrase, if it depends.
Yep.
Okay.
Totally.
That's good.
How's that one?
Many, many options and some good solutions there. So you've mm-hmm. addressed that one, and then you meander a little further, and you look over to your right, and now you've got a whole patch of plants that seem kind of thin, and they're struggling and a little stunted. And you look a little further, and the sidearms are short, and the leaves are kind of curled up. So what could that be telling us?
Mm-hmm. That, again, you've got several things you just described to me could, when taken individually, there could be a multitude of things. But when taken collectively, there's really only one thing that points to, and that would be systemic downy mildew. And this is downy mildew, an infection that would have gotten into the plant at some point in its life cycle. It doesn't have to be this year. It could have gotten infected last year or the year before, and that disease stays active inside the plant. And it is notorious that once the crown gets systemically infected, the vigor starts to drop just of the overall plant. So you could see plants around them that are the same age that are, you know, topping out and flowered and whatnot, and then these are just sort of struggling. That in and of itself, the stunting doesn't necessarily equal downy mildew, but that's a symptom of systemic downy. The fact that the sidearms are also stunted, and by stunted, you know, the space in between the leaves, the nodes, is compressed. And they kind of stack up on each other. And, you know, let's say a sidearm is supposed to be 3 feet long and your sidearm is 9 inches long or shorter. That sidearm could be, just the sidearm could have been infected with downy, and that infection is working its way back into the plant. That would be if just the sidearm was affected and everything else in the plant looked great. But since you've got total plant stunting and sidearm stunting, again, systemic downy mildew is looking more and more likely. The third sort of nail in the coffin here is any leaves that were there. You said they were sort of cupped downwards. That's the third nail symptom of systemic downy. You will see that in, even if you don't see the stunting or what we call the inner node shortening of downy infected leaves, you will see downward curling from systemically infected plants. So 1, 2, 3, bang, bang, bang. That's absolutely downy
mildew. You'll have to forgive me, but I'm thinking about little arms and sort of a depressed-looking set of leaves. I'm picturing a very sad Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know?
Yeah, kind of. It's the Charlie Brown Christmas tree of hop plants. It's not healthy. And I've got some pictures of this in Sterling, which is like the poster child for systemic Downy, that we could look at. But I'm going with systemic Downy mildew there. And the fact that it's multiple plants around it also leads me to think that it's an infection that probably started early a few years ago and is now just finally getting to the point where the crowns are becoming non-viable, and likely the following year they're not going to come up at all.
And we've talked about this many times, that you can't be a weekend hop grower. You need to be constantly diligent looking at things. Is this something that, you know, when you walk down row 2 yesterday everything looked fine, and then today, whoa, what just happened?
In this case with Downy, no. This is something that happens over time and is a symptom of either neglect or just plain ignorance. People don't know what they're looking for, or something that is symptomatic of, yeah, okay, James, I've been treating for it, but I'm still seeing it. Well, obviously, whatever you're using as a treatment isn't working. This kind of Downy infection does not pop up overnight. This takes years. What else you got? Throw a socket to me.
Now you walk a little further and you look up, because the wonder of hops is that it's high. You're looking at your beautiful field.
Okay.
But you're seeing that at about the 8-foot point, things tend to have stalled out. Your leaves down below are nice and dark green. But above that, the top, you know, 4 or 5 feet or so, the leaves are looking yellow, and it just doesn't seem to want to present with vigor up high.
Okay. So, if really I'm looking at the plant itself, is probably shaped like a normal plant should be, like an uninfected plant, I would assume, should be. So, not like stunted and Charlie Brownish, like the last example. So, if we're just looking at leaf color and some general sort of lack of vigor, then, you know, the first thing everybody freaks out about is, oh my God, I got yellow leaves. First thing they think about is, if it's not Downy, because everybody freaks out about Downy because they hear how awful it is. And if you get it, you're done. That's not true, by the way. The other thing I think of is viruses. Oh my God, I have viruses. Well, in this instance, if like the whole leaf is yellow and everything else, like on top, and the bottom is green, that doesn't lead me to think of virus. That leads me to think of nutrient deficiency. And this is where it gets really tough, because when you're just going off of leaf color, it's like if you look in any textbook and they'll have like a dozen examples of a corn leaf showing, you know, 12 corn leaves, 12 different nutrient deficiencies, be whether it's calcium or potassium or whatever it is, I swear to God, half of them just look yellow. So people are like, oh, it's yellow. It's a nutrient deficiency, more nitrogen. The thing that says it's not nitrogen is the fact that you said the bottom leaves are green. So if bottom leaves are green, that means it cannot be nitrogen, because nitrogen inside the plant is mobile. And as the plant grows, if it's growing in a nitrogen deficient situation, it will cannibalize its old leaves for nitrogen and send that nitrogen to the growing tip. And the old leaves at the bottom would yellow. So nitrogen's right out. What else could it be? Well, there's a lot of other nutrient deficiencies, and maybe we'll save those for that they present very uniquely. We'll save those. This is a unique one. It's a good one that I think a lot of people don't see all the time. But the telltale sign of this specific element deficiency is the fact that the plant is growing, the leaves are reasonably shaped. It may be a bit stunted, certainly for this time of year, if it's at 8 or 9 feet tall. That is textbook sulfur deficiency. Sulfur's usually not a problem. for most people, unless you happen to be in a highly acidic soil or a really sandy soil, in which case you can give the plant everything that it needs, but now it's getting into what we call these secondary nutrients that most people don't think about, nor are they usually added to fertilizers. You usually have to get them specific.
And to your point, so, that's because they're usually not a problem. They're usually present naturally in enough volume.
Right, right. Or even, or they're there like a, in a nitrogen formulation as a counterbalance ion. So like the fertilizer ammonium sulfate, that's a nitrogen fertilizer people use. So if you're using that, you're never going to have a sulfur problem because the counter molecule to the ammonium, the nitrogen part, is sulfur. So your plants are getting plenty of sulfur, but folks that aren't using that, they're using a different nitrogen source like urea, which is doesn't have any sulfur in it at all. Then, well, if you're in a sandy soil, you could very well find yourself sulfur deficient. But the thing with deficiency symptoms, when you see them in the field, it's too late. There's very little, you're not going to correct that plant's deficiency for that season. That's telling you something is wrong. And I would go back to you and say, show me your tissue test. Have you done a tissue sampling? Well, here's my soil test. Soil chemistry means soil sample results for nutrients mean jack if you're seeing something in the plant, because you may have plenty of nutrients in the soil, but you may have a problem with uptake, and that's usually a soil pH problem, too acidic or too alkaline. So even though your soil test comes back, it's like, oh, look at all this sulfur I've got. Well, if you're outside of the appropriate acidity or alkalinity range, it's unavailable to the plant. So you just keep dumping that sulfur on the soil, and the plant's going to keep ignoring it. You need to do a tissue test, and you take the leaves, 4 or 5 leaves from the affected plant with the stem intact, and you send it in for analysis, a total plant tissue analysis.
Now, when you say that, you know, we've talked about the fact that the lower leaves look good, the upper leaves look bad. Do you send some of each?
You could if you wanted to get an overall profile, but typically what we do for a plant that's supposed to be, you know, mature is we would take them from about chin height, because the older leaves at the bottom, they are old and they have probably been exporting nutrients for a while. So that's really not a good representation of the overall plant's nutritional health. And certainly if you have heavily affected leaves, you want to take some samples of those and then take some samples of good leaves from the same plant, if possible, or right next door, send them in and look for the differences. But in this case, the green on the bottom, yellow on the top, stunted growth, classic sulfur deficiency.
And I want to make sure that everyone's clear on the fact that how important it is that there are clues both in the affected area and the unaffected area. And when we talked about the Fusarium canker as well, a lot of that has to do with the fact that you've got heavy grasses going on below it, the
yep.
canker, and then the vine borer examples.
Yep.
So I hate to keep bashing on the forums that are out there, and there's a lot of great information and camaraderie to be had from all of these forums, from like-minded folks who are growing, but a close-up picture of just where you think the problem is does not provide the full context to really diagnose what's going on.
No, not at all. Typically, when people send me a text of a picture, you know, hey, I found this in my hop yard. Great. What am I looking at? Well, what's wrong with my hops? I don't know. What variety is it? How old is it? Where do you have it planted? What's your fertilizer schedule? What's your insecticide? Do you have any pest problems? What's your fungicide application rate? What's your irrigation? It's so much that you just can't send a picture and say, what's wrong? Now, in these cases that you're giving to me, you know, they're, at least these first couple for me, they're kind of softballs because they're easy to spot and you can clearly see that there's something wrong. But there's a lot of other cases where, as I tell some of the folks that work for me now, I'm like, you got to Sherlock the shit out of this because you have to keep asking questions and eliminating suspects.
Do you remember the picture I sent you of the apple tree in my yard a few years ago?
Oh, yes.
I took a picture. We had all of a sudden we were getting apples where we hadn't before. I took a picture and sent it to you and said, what is this? And do you recall what you said?
No, but it was probably pretty witty.
it was, that's an apple.
Exactly.
I believe my response had some profanity involved after that.
I'm so funny.
Oh, yes, yes, you're a freaking riot.
Yep.
That is okay, let's walk further down the hop yard here.
More in the same yard? God, this person's got some problems.
This is a tough row. This is a very tough row.
Sounds like it.
At the end of the row, we've got a beer fridge, so we can have one and then turn and come down the next row. So there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Less talking, more walking.
Mm-hmm. So you come to the next section here, and you see some leaves that are curled up and stuck together. Not all of them, just sort of randomly. Some of them are curled up and kind of crinkly and crunchy.
Curled up, like rolled up, or stuck together. Okay. So, if I were a betting man, I would say I'd try and pull those apart. Pull the leaf apart if it's rolled over or stuck to itself, because I want to see why that is. You know, you're like, whoa, why is that leaf growing so weird? Well, it's probably not. So I would say in this scenario, you probably have a resident caterpillar called a leaf roller. And it's, again, it's a larval stage of a moth. And what these critters like to do is they do exactly that. So instead of basically forming a cocoon out of silk, they will form a cocoon out of leaves. So they'll get on your leaf, they'll stick it together with their, you know, mucilaginous goo, and they will eat inside of there and go through their metamorphosis. They're usually not a problem, but I see them every now and again. I would see them in our yards. If I saw on, 10 acres, if I saw 10 affected leaves, that would be a lot. But I know people can freak out when they see it, like, oh my God, I got to spray something. Really? I mean, yeah, if you're just completely infested with these leaf rollers, then you might want to think about it. But usually it's like one plant here and another one over there. Let them live out their life cycle.
Yeah, you are outside.
Yeah, exactly.
These things are going to happen.
Exactly. So I would say that's definitely a leaf roller.
Yeah, as you know, I spend a lot of time camping and going around with the Boy Scouts, and I can't tell you how many times I look at them and say, hey, you got some nature on you.
We were at, this is off topic, but it's absolutely an eye roller. So we were at one of Wisconsin's many fabulous state parks. This was years ago, and we were there with a group of friends, and there were these glamping people next to us. It was a particularly wet year, and they checked out behind us at the end of the weekend. They were driving behind us, and I gotten out and securing something to the car or whatever, and I could hear them railing to the park ranger about how they should do something about the insect problem they have. And that nature was fine, but to a point.
Oh, wow.
Like, pack up your frickin' Williams Sonoma canvas tent and go back to the city. Anyway. Yes.
We stayed somewhere a few years ago, and it was a campground for tent camping, but also an RV park. And, you know, they're handing us the paperwork for plugging into the satellite dish and all that. And we said, yeah, we're good. We're not going to be using that, but thank you.
Which is why I don't go camping now, because I live out in the country and I should probably charge people to camp in my yard. Anyway, back on topic. So what else is in this godforsaken hop yard?
Oh, yeah. This is not a happy hop yard at all.
Not by far. So far, not the worst I've seen, let me tell you.
Okay, fair enough. This is a patchwork one. It's got a little bit of everything.
Okay, all right. Sock it to me.
Let's see. So this is simple, but probably a lot of possibilities here.
Oh, God.
Just the leaves just have kind of, the edges of them are sort of brown and a little crispy, almost like a little burned.
Crispy. Okay. Yeah, that could be a lot of
things.
That was
a good Homer Simpson there, by the way.
Crispy. Yeah, you're right. God, Lord, that could be lots of things. All right, I'm going to ask you some questions. Mid end of June. So I'm going to say, are these brown spots They're just on the edges, or do they like every now and again like start to eat into the plant like backwards and sort of like a V shape?
They do kind of come in, yes, okay. Sort of like triangular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So then I'm going to take a look at that leaf. Really, I'm going to get one that's in the shade. I'm going to slowly turn that leaf over. It might take me a few leaves to find what I'm looking for, but because these things are very, very difficult to locate, they're called leaf hoppers. They're tiny little insects. They're either pale green white, or sometimes they can be like neon green. They're super tiny. They look like mini, mini, teeny, teeny, tiny, millimeter long grasshoppers. But the thing that creeps people out is they like scuttle sideways like a crab.
Ooh.
These are leaf juice suckers, and they'll hop away immediately. So that's why you got to be really careful. They do like to come out around this time of year. And certainly if you live anywhere that has potatoes or alfalfa growing near it, anytime they do an alfalfa cut, these leaf hoppers will whoosh, just flood out of the field. So in this scenario, what you're dealing with is a leaf hopper. And when it sucks the plant juices out, it actually injects a protein into the plant so that the plant can't heal itself. And that causes the tissue to slowly die back in these very stereotypical, like, triangular shapes away from the leaf edge. And these things can infest huge, huge chunks of your field. And they don't do anything to the cones, but they will decrease your yield just because they're stressing the plant and the photosynthesis can't be as efficient with damaged leaves. So those are leaf hoppers.
So is that a situation where you can treat and deal with it, or once yes. you see them, are you already too far down the path?
Nope, you can treat them. That would be a contact insecticide at that point. There are some systemic insecticides one could spray that really only target leaf juice sucking insects. So it's not like you're spraying this broad spectrum insecticide and killing off all the honeybees and stuff. This would be one where you would apply it to the leaves. It would soak into the plant, and for a given period of time, any insects that sucked the juices would be affected. So that would be the route I would go. Controlling large infestations of leaf hoppers biologically is extremely difficult. And it's usually because of, like I said, a large cut on an alfalfa field or potatoes. Leaf hoppers are often a big problem. So if you know that you live next to some serious ag land that could produce these pests, it's a good idea to have something in your arsenal that you can use to treat with. But they could be spot applied too if you just have a hot spot here or there. So that would be leaf hoppers.
All right. So now if you don't find leaf hoppers,
so then that would mean I'm not finding those triangular, sort of reverse triangular lesions from the margin. So if the edges are crispy, if just the edges are crispy, and the rest of the leaf looks fine and the color's fine, but the edges are crispy, I would guess that you might have had some very, very high heat recently, with a lot of evapotranspiration, a lot of water leaving through the leaves. And you can actually get a leaf margin burn from that, where just the edges of the leaves die off. That's rare, but since if there was nothing else wrong with the leaves, that can happen. My guess is, though, that if we looked more closely at those leaves, we would probably find they're probably maybe thickened and a bit leathery. Sometimes they can also do some downward cupping. It's very slight. It's not like cupping like you get with downy mildew. But in that case, I would ask you to show me again your tissue test results. Usually you'd say, I don't have any. And then say, show me your soil test results. What you're describing to me sounds very much like, in this case, another nutrient deficiency. This one sounds like calcium. It can happen, again, because a lot of calcium even though you say you've got, well, I've got a lot of limestone, that's calcium carbonate, I should have plenty of calcium. Yeah, well, that stuff's not available. That's bound. So you can actually find some yards that will develop a calcium deficiency. And so brown margins, thick leathery leaves, and slightly downward cupping, that sounds like calcium deficiency.
Is that similar to a sulfur deficiency in the sense that most soils just inherently are okay, and this is kind of a fringe situation?
Yeah. So that I would be looking for the soil test at that point. If you didn't have a tissue test, I'd look at the soil test. I'd be looking at, you know, the levels of available calcium in your test. I'd be looking at something called the calcium to magnesium ratio. And too much magnesium in the soil, or too much magnesium being applied as a fertilizer, can displace calcium in the soil, called the cation exchange capacity. It's like a battery of the soil that holds onto your nutrients. And once it's displaced, it can wash away. So in this particular scenario, it sounds to me like a calcium deficiency. There's still another option.
I was going to say, you look at the tissue test and, well, it's not a calcium deficiency. So, let's hear the next option.
What in the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. Then I want to see your spray records. Why do I want to see my spray records? I told you, you know, I put all my stuff on at the right time. Well, you put stuff on, that's for sure. I want to see what you mix together. Because many, many agricultural chemicals cannot be tank mixed and applied together, nor can they be applied back to back. A really great example of that is an aluminum fungicide called Aliette cannot be applied with copper fungicide. Those two mixed together, sprayed on your plants, equals a fantastic defoliant. And you're like, well, I don't spray those back to back. Yeah, but did you have copper in your tank before you sprayed? Like a residue? Did you have copper on your plants from a week before and you never got any rain, so there was still residue on the leaf? So I would be looking for what we call phytotoxicity. So toxic to the plant mixtures in your spray records. It could also be, well, I spray a foliar fertilizer every week. Well, you're spraying too much because you're drying the edges of the leaves out. So in this case, seems to be a relatively innocuous observation. There could be a half a dozen different triggers for it.
And, you know, the whole mixing and back-to-back of the chemical applications is very interesting because, look, this is the same thing when you have multiple doctors and you want to make sure they each know what you're taking. Things do react together, mm-hmm. and you've got to be cognizant of that stuff. We've talked before about chemical applications and having a pesticide applicator's license and just knowing what you're putting on the plants and not just doing what your neighbor says they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Educate yourself. I mean, hopefully you're listening to this podcast. I mean, aside from just the intense enjoyment one gets out of this entertainment, you're learning something, but educate yourself. And for the love of, don't use Facebook as your primary source of information. There are lots of reputable sources out there. Go to your local agricultural cooperative and ask them, hey, do you have an agronomist on staff? Do you have any recommended readings on plant nutrition? It sounds geeky, but do you want to win or not? Look at university publications online to teach yourself about these things. Just don't take the manufacturer's word for it, and certainly don't take your neighbor Bob's word for it, because, you know, he uses it just fine and there isn't any problem.
Now, all that said, if you found the podcast through Facebook, by all means, share us with all of your friends.
No, I was talking about everybody else on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, not you.
Yeah, no.
Not you, the listener right now, everyone else on Facebook.
Exactly, yep. What else you got?
Let's see. So, okay.
Give me some hard ones.
How about this? You before we talked about finding one bad vine in a group of healthy ones. Something similar here. You run into a couple of just stunted plants in a very large patch of plants that look just fine. So you've just got a couple that don't look happy.
Okay. first thing I would do is make sure, you know, I'm looking around. If this is the same yard, we know the person has a weed problem. or maybe we're in a different part of the field. Maybe this is pristine. But regardless, there, you know, are these things competing heavily? Certainly if you're walking into a large patch. But odds are probably not good that it's weeds. So I'm going to look more closely at the leaves. Because again, the leaves are going to be the ones that are going to show you the first major symptoms. It's sort of, you know, these plants can't tell you what's wrong. I would say, do they look weird? I mean,
they're more than just small. They've got a little bit of a faint yellow to them.
Okay, so I'm looking more at the leaves. Are there any, like, brownish, like, scabby kind of lesions on them?
Let's say no for now. Maybe we'll come back and say yes later and go down a different
path. All right, okay. So, those leaves, they say they're yellow. So I'm going to take a closer look at those leaves. Are they solid yellow like the sulfur, or are they
kind of light?
Kind of light. Are they mottled at all? Like
yes.
Lightly mottled? Okay.
Yes. Faint.
All right. Okay. That got me a suspect. But, okay. So these are the stunted plants. So I'm going to go to plants that are around them that look quote, normal. And I want to find a leaf, and I'm going to pull it off, and I'm going to hold it up to the light. Not like right up to the sun, but like up to a bright sky. By doing that, looking through the leaf, you know, like the light behind it, is there a faint mottling noticeable?
Yes, yes. Now that you're looking at them in more intense light, you can see that.
Of the quote, healthy leaf.
Okay. Of the healthy ones, yep.
Okay. Got it. Next question.
You're going to tell us what it is.
Oh, I have to share with you.
Yes, you do.
That sucks. I would say that you want to take some of the leaves of the heavily affected plant, and you're going to send that to your local state lab or a lab online and have them run a complete Carla virus analysis. Because I do believe that you, sir, on these plants have hop mosaic virus.
I once got a virus from a Carla, but that's a different
story.
That's
a total different story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hop mosaic virus is a pretty widespread virus. It's in the environment. It's pretty much everywhere in the U.S. now, North America. And it's transmitted by aphids typically, but can also be transmitted mechanically or through rhizomes that came off a plant that was infected, or through really poor greenhouse production practices. But I would say the reason I asked you about the plants that, quote, looked healthy,
mm-hmm,
is
they're not.
They're not. They're just not showing the virus hasn't done so much damage that it stunted the plant. And I would guess that if we come back next year, those plants that are stunted and aren't looking happy probably won't even sprout in the spring, and the plants that are around them will start showing heavier physical symptoms.
And, you know, earlier we said we'd come back to one of those pivot points there, which was, do we see little kind of brown scabs on the leaves? That would be the more robust physical symptom we're talking about.
Yeah, that symptom, if we had sort of stunted plants, or, you know, certainly their vigor doesn't look great, and you could have some yellowed leaves, I'd be looking for what I describe as those lesions or scabs. They tend to form almost a circle, not a solid circle, like a ring on the leaf. And that is stereotypical red blinking light apple mosaic virus infection. Very common, but also not something that one can cure. So once it's got it, the plant has it, and it will Some varieties are more susceptible to others to apple mosaic virus. Some varieties can have it, present symptoms, and never really see much of a yield or a longevity decrease, but other varieties are definitely susceptible to it, and it will kill the plant.
So when you say that you can't cure it, can you contain it and limit the spread?
As with any hop virus, you can contain it by doing one of several things. You can make sure that you are not transmitting that virus, because the number one prime transmission vector, as we call it, for these viruses are humans. And it's usually because people are out there messing around with your plants, either visitors, they've maybe, like, that's why I was always so paranoid about having groups come out to the hop yard if they had been at other hop yards, because if they were out handling plants that were infected and rubbing hops and, you know, all that, and then they come into our yard and they start doing that, they are vectors for virus. Cleaning tools, making sure you're not using the same tools moving from an infected plant to a clean plant. That goes for shears and pruners and shovels and spades to mowers and, you know, all kinds of other heavier equipment that will spread viruses around like nobody's business. In order to contain a hot spot like this, what I would typically do is I would scout around, now that I know what I'm looking for, the perimeter until I find an area where I'm not seeing those mottled leaf symptoms even when I hold it up to the light. And all the plants inside that perimeter, I would kill. And that's really your only way to stop the spread of those things. That's why you want to be on top of it early. and know that, because this can get out of control really, really quickly.
And, you know, we spoke earlier about things that come upon rapidly or take a slow time to manifest, where you can catch them early. Is this one of those that can be caught early?
A lot of times you won't even notice it, because it won't present symptoms until you've already spread the virus around. So that's one of the benefits of starting with plants that have been tested, because if you don't have it in your hop yard now, i.e. you're not transferring it around already, yes, it is in the environment, but it's not like all of a sudden the next day you're going to wake up and your whole yard's going to be infected. Odds are you got that infection through infected plant stock, assuming that you had the utmost in production horticulture care, which is difficult to assume. Some of these, like I said, the hop mosaic virus can be spread by insects. So then it's like, well, whatever, I can't stop that from happening. But apple mosaic virus is not spread by insects. That comes from infected plant stock and or transmission from humans. So ultimately, it's our fault then. Not easy to find before there is a problem.
I'm going to blame Carla, quite honestly.
That Carla, I tell you, Mom said she was no good. Well, I don't know. I'm flash carded out for today.
Yeah, I think what I didn't tell you is that we're going to call this one Stump the Chump.
Stump the Chump. Mm-hmm. Ooh, am I the chump?
You are.
Awesome.
You are the chump. And, you know, as we always say, please get in touch with us. I would love to run through a bunch of these examples again with actual examples from our listeners with pictures from their yards. But remember, as we said, context, phrasing. we need to see, you know, pictures of the surrounding area and tell us what else is going on. But I would love to run a whole nother session of this with five or six things sent in from our listeners where we can help them diagnose what's going on.
Oh, that'd be cool. And maybe we could share those pictures like after the podcast lands, and so people can see what we're talking about somehow.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Please don't ask for pictures of Carla. I don't have any.
No. Well, none that you want to share.
No, definitely not.
Okay. Well, I'm the chump, and that's all I got.
Thanks, everyone.
Mom said she was no good.